Chapter 17. Aspen. The trek to refuge went fairly smoothly, all things considered. There was some jostling for place among the Kefiji, as various elders tried to decide whether to openly support Okrug Kin Fokley, or wait until meeting Queen Saravale. To Aspen's relief and mild amusement, most seemed to be coming down on the side of wait and see. It seemed that the porcine elder hadn't exactly endeared himself to his fellow goblins, either. As they traveled, Aspen used his life sense to send a heel to Nekthat, knitting back together the sliced flesh of his back and side. It was much more difficult to do this from a distance, but since Aspen knew Nekthat fairly well now, it was manageable. Once the healing was complete, he could see that the goblin was moving more easily, where he strode silently at the head of the little column. Aspen turned his attention to their surroundings. He had, of course, been watching for any sign that there were more goblins hiding somewhere, waiting to attack Nekthat, but there had been no sign of an ambush. Aspen hadn't caught even a flicker of anything larger than a squirrel in the surrounding area, and though he knew that some forms of stealth made the user all but invisible, even to his life sense, he had a feeling that in this case they had managed to reach the goblins before they put any such safeguards in place. The Kefiji had been overconfident, and it had placed the entire group in a precarious position. When the dirt path beneath their feet changed to smooth stone, the goblins were surprised. When they reached the edge of the city and the newcomers saw the high walls, the fortified gate, and the bluestones, they began murmuring among themselves. Sarave had told Aspen that goblin settlements didn't have bluestones, and that was a large part of why the goblins had so quickly moved to Bright. The simple ability to sleep at night without guards was like a miracle to them. Sarave waited at the gate. Her hair was done in an intricate series of braids that fell past her waist, and she wore a strange garment that was apparently traditional goblin-ta clothing. The top was a sort of short tunic made of many light, colorful layers, exposing her arms and belly, while the bottom was an equally lightweight skirt that ballooned out around her legs but was gathered at the ankles and sewn closed to create voluminous pants. She looked very exotic, and her beautiful yellow eyes glowed cat-like in the moonlight. Behind her stood Florence, Horace, and the rest of the tough-looking men and women who had volunteered to join the militia when refuge was created. Since then, they had been training hard, using the boost to military-related skill experience generated by the barracks, and even though they'd only had a few weeks to train together, it was obvious that they were a unit. Even former Captain Kyle had settled down once he was given command of the police force. This left Florence and Horace to guard Sarave and the rest of the royal family, which seemed to be enough separation to make everyone happy. Nekthat came to a halt at the edge of the bluestones and crossed both arms over his chest, bowing to his sister. Liadfi, Saravale Hui. Sarave slightly inclined her head, acknowledging the greeting. Lujvin Quo Nekthat Ifsthin. Her tranquil gaze crossed the faces of the group, hesitating only slightly as she saw Karali and Okrug. Lujvin Quo Saravale Hui Kon Werg, Kefijieji Justat. Sarave had spent some time trying to decide what to say if the approaching goblins did turn out to contain some of the old goblin leadership. Eventually she and Aspen had settled on this, which essentially meant, "Welcome in the name of Queen Saravale, lords and warriors." This immediately established her claim of sovereignty, while at the same time showing that she, as host, was in charge. Raising one hand, she regally motioned to the guards, who stepped aside as one, creating a pathway for the visitors. As the way forward opened, Aspen stepped out of the tree line behind them. His sudden appearance and 6-foot-plus frame, no doubt aided by the 8-foot-high war goat behind him, clearly flustered the Kefiji, who nearly tumbled over each other in an effort to get away from him. Karali and the other Justat, on the other hand, showed no surprise at all, and Aspen wondered how long they'd known he was behind them. The goblins, now surrounded and at least slightly intimidated, shuffled forward into the city. Once all of them were fully on the bluestones, the guards circled around them, and Aspen and Kor came in to close the far side of the circle. Sarave looked from the goblins to Aspen. She bared her sharp teeth and said, "Kefiji, I would like to introduce to you my ally. This is Aspen, chosen by the goddess Gina, whom I serve. You perhaps might better know him as Hosinte Sakinte, the Scourge of the Dark Races." At this, several of the elders nearly cowered, their faces showing confusion and fear. The Justat stiffened, and a few put hands to knife hilt, while others, including Karali, simply held very still, their eyes locked on Aspen. Aspen sighed. He hadn't been in favor of revealing this to the goblins, but Sarave and Nekthat, who knew their people far better, both insisted that it was necessary. Still, it wasn't like he was that person anymore, and he could no more raise hordes of undead now than he could paint a portrait with his toes. He tilted his head, a careful bit deeper than Sarave had done, but no further. Lujvin quo Saravale hui kon werg. The words welcomed the new goblins in the name of Queen Saravale, telling them that he was her servant instead of the other way around. The words were strange on his tongue, but he thought he managed them credibly, and from the small smile Sarave sent him she thought so as well. "As you know," Sarave continued, her fluid accent heavier than usual, "our nation is at war. To be certain that no one who enters this city has ill intentions, Aspen will use a spell granted to him by Gina. So long as you bear no links with the evil who opposes us, this spell will have no effect." Ignoring the protests of a few of the Kefiji, Sarave nodded to Aspen, who raised his glowing hand. "Gwino." A sudden wind lifted Sarave's braids and made her gauzy clothes flutter. It tugged playfully at Aspen's hair, pulling at his hat until he had to clap a hand to his head to keep it on. The gust was not so kind to the goblins, however. It blew hard enough that some of the Kefiji actually staggered, and the various sheaths and pouches strapped to the justat lifted and bounced against their black leather garments. Suddenly, Okruj squealed and collapsed to his knees, trembling and clutching at his head. Nearby, another Kefiji, one of the ones who had stayed near Okruj as they walked, bent over in pain, and then another. Aspen opened his life sense to its fullest, feeling his mana drain from him like water from an open spigot as he did so. Sure enough, the spirits of several of the Kefiji were tainted and tattered. Aspen had seen this before, when he was in Bright, and they'd captured and interrogated a cultist during their search for Vaughn's family. Another goblin fell wailing, and Aspen waded in. Stick shifted to its short sickle form, and Aspen swung it through what must seem like clear air next to each of those affected. Black, leprous strings hung there, visible only to Aspen, tying each of the fallen goblins to something. As he cut, the strands clung to his blade, and he used his mage smithing skill to make the edge burn white-blue until the last fragments fell away in invisible ash. When all of the goblins were clear of the contamination, the wind whirled around them. Before Aspen's eyes, the ragged edges of their spirits pulled together, and holes scarred over. They were still only sad remnants of what they should be, but they were no longer being eaten alive by the thing to which they had sold their souls. At last, the gale turned back to a gust, then a breeze, and finally all that remained was a lingering scent of gardenias and freesia. Everyone there breathed in deeply, taking in the warm and comforting fragrance as if they would never again smell anything so sweet. A last teasing puff tickled Aspen's ear, and then it was over. 5 Kefiji were on the ground, unconscious. 3 more knelt, taking deep, gasping breaths as they fought the tremors that shook their bodies. One justat clutched at his chest, face a pale shade of yellowish-green, while another looked like he was fighting the urge to vomit. Sarave pointed at each of the goblins afflicted. "You have a choice now. You may submit to Gina's judgment and hope to be forgiven, or you will be held under guard until this conflict is resolved." The justat who had been clutching his chest suddenly grasped one of the blades next to his hand and lunged towards Sarave. Nekthat, Aspen and the guards all moved to intercept him, but it was Karali who stood beside the man, who knocked the blade from his hand, then grabbed his arm and twisted it up behind his back. Sarave, of course, should be in no actual danger, thanks to the bluestones on which they stood, but the goblin had forgotten that in his frenzy. Karali forced the goblin down to his knees in front of Sarave. She couldn't actually harm him, but subduing him lay just inside what the bluestones allowed. Karali bowed her own head. "I, Karali Kin Thor, recognize Saravale Hui, daughter of Thalin. This," she shoved at the man in her remorseless grip, "is Oprinya. As he is my FISDU, my subordinate, I have the right to his life if he breaks his vows. I request that Hui grant me this honor." Sarave hesitated, and Aspen saw the moment the weight of that request landed squarely on her small shoulders. Her yellow eyes met his, and he could practically hear her say, "This is the prison that you gave to me." Then her eyes met Karali's again, and she nodded. "I grant you this right, Karali Kin Thor. Only hold until he is given the chance to repent." Aspen nodded and drew in his breath. "Clarity," he said, and everyone froze. The goblins on the ground, and the ones on their knees, suddenly looked as though they had seen something terrible. Their faces contorted into grimaces of horror and revulsion, and one actually doubled over, vomiting onto the bluestones. Nearly all of the other goblins looked uncomfortable, as did many of the guards. Only a few people, including Sarave, looked as if they were filled with a peace so profound that their faces relaxed into brilliant smiles. The man beneath Kurali's hand howled and attempted to throw himself towards Sarave again, teeth snapping and eyes mad with fury. Kurali was forced out of her own reverie, and Nekthat stepped over to grasp the insane Justat's other arm. Sarave, smile gone as if it had never been, shook her head. "Do as you must, Justat." Kurali and Nekthat exchanged glances, and each grasped the wailing madman by one arm and one leg, and carried him bodily from the safety of the Bluestones. Aspen kept his eyes on Sarave as the gibbering screams ceased suddenly, and he was probably the only one who knew how much she regretted what had to be done. When the Ifsthin and the Justat returned, Sarave nodded to them before turning to the rest of the goblins. "You have been cleansed, and you have had the opportunity to repent. The wicked god no longer has a claim on your souls, and you may begin anew from this moment. Few people are granted second chances, and there will be no third." She looked into each goblin's eyes. "You may recognize me as Hui now, or you may wait until the end of the war. Either way, you are Goblinta, and you are mine." As one, the remaining Justat fell to their knees, heads bent and arms crossed over their chests. A few of the Kefiji followed suit, mostly the younger ones, but most of them stood stubbornly straight, glaring at Sarave rebelliously. A voice came from the trees behind Aspen, and he turned, realizing that he had unconsciously shut down his life sense after the winnowing. The oldest goblin he'd ever seen stood just outside of the tree line, supported by two younger females with their hair in long black braids similar to the one Sarave preferred. "Sarave Vikniti, these old eyes are glad to see you, but I also see that these Kefiji continue to cause trouble." The old goblin took a shaky step forward, and Rouge and Codswallop emerged from the trees behind her. "Aspen, meets Sarave and Ned's aunt. She's a riot." Sarave let out a little cry of joy and started forward, but the aged goblin raised a staying hand. "Saravale Hui, you forget yourself," she said sharply. "Dignity before age, girl." Sarave stopped in her tracks, flushing, and waited as the two younger goblins assisted her aunt forward. When the old woman had almost reached the Bluestones, she stopped and looked back at the trees. "What are you waiting for?" "An invitation." Taking the hint, Sarave also looked toward the tree line and said, "Luj Vinquo Saravale Hui Kon." At that, the bushes rustled, and at least two dozen female goblins trickled from the foliage. They were thin and haggard, their clothes dirty and worn, but as they looked at their queen, their faces were full of desperate hope. Around Sarave, the male goblins began to shift and mutter angrily. One of the Kefiji, who had just made his way to his feet, spat on the ground. "Females, what are you doing here? You were told to wait until we dealt with this." Sarave's aunt looked him full in the eye and said tartly, "Watch your words, you whelp. I am Kefi, and eldest. I told these females to come, and they know how to obey." The Kefiji looked rebellious, but said nothing more as the female goblins crept forward to the very edge of the Bluestones. Sarave came forward then, carefully dignified, and grasped her aunt's hands, pulling her into the city. "Come, aunt. You and your companions are welcome. We'll find you all a place to rest." "What?" the Kefiji Sarave's aunt had berated broke in. "You forced all of us to submit to your pet murderer's attack, but not these? Do you not think females are also capable of treachery?" His lip curled and he looked pointedly from Sarave to Kurali. "I think we have seen proof enough today that women can betray as easily as men." Sarave paused. Looking at Aspen, she said, "Is it possible?" Aspen hesitated. Winnow was meant to be used to purify those who had been tainted by darkness, not as a test, and the message he had received from Gina when she granted him the skill had been clear that the consequences of improper use would be painful at best. Clarity, on the other hand, could be used only once per encounter or event, and might not even work if this was still the same encounter. Closing his eyes, he opened his mental sight wide, turning it toward the female goblins. Most of their spirits were as he expected, ranging widely in color and brightness, but intact and healthy. Two, however, showed signs of the same depredation that had eaten at many of the male goblins, and he grimaced as he opened his eyes. "I can try," he said. "But I suggest we make certain that only the females are affected." Sarave nodded and motioned to the guards and goblin guests to back up. They did so, and Aspen noticed approvingly that Kurali kept her eyes on the Kefiji, who had been arguing with Sarave. Aspen stepped forward and bowed slightly to the elderly goblin female. I am sorry, but before you may enter, we must be certain that all of you are untouched by our enemies. The old woman looked sharply at Sarave, who was still gripping her knobby hands as if she'd never let go, and Sarave nodded encouragingly. This is Aspen. He is Gina's chosen, and no one will be harmed, so long as they are innocent. At this, the woman with the largest holes in her spirit wailed and sank to her knees, clutching at the small bundle strapped to her chest. I'm sorry, she cried, tears coursing down her sharp-boned face. My Li Wei said he would slay our sons if I didn't do it. Please don't kill my daughter. With trembling hands, she pulled a tiny goblin baby from her bundle. The infant was all huge head, and looked more like a green seed pod than any baby Aspen had seen before. The puny arms and legs were curled close to its diminutive body, and it didn't cry at the sudden disturbance, but simply blinked at all of the people staring down at it. This was the first time Aspen had ever seen a pure goblin babe, and he wondered if this one was a proper representative of its kind. Sarave released one of her aunt's hands and reached out to touch the woman. Be at peace, Rasab. If you were truly forced to submit to the evil one, you will soon be free. The female clutched at her baby and continued to cry, clearly unconvinced, and so Aspen simply said, Winnow once again. The wind was stronger this time, and snapped in gentle reprimand at Aspen's hair and clothes. It swept through like a small windstorm, and when it was gone, the scent that lingered was all blackberries and lime. Before Aspen's inner eye, the hint of darkness on two of the females vanished completely, and the thin patches were repaired. The baby of the kneeling woman too had suffered some damage, and this was swept away by the healing wind. The woman, on the other hand, cried with renewed force as the black blemishes on her spirit faded to gray, before blowing away in tatters of ash, leaving it cleansed but full of gaps. There was no string tying her to Apophis, so Aspen had nothing to sever, for which he was grateful. When he said clarity, and the silver tattoo on his hand flared into brilliance, the women gasped. Most of them looked slightly troubled, but the woman on the ground screamed and convulsed, nearly dropping her child. Without thinking, Aspen leaned down and scooped up the tiny thing. It barely filled one of his hands, and he found himself terrified that he would somehow injure it. It stared up at him with pale yellow eyes and yawned, revealing two needle-like teeth pushing through its lower gums. When the moment of clarity was over, several females had tears running down their faces, two were smiling, and Sarave's aunt looked oddly self-satisfied. Nekthat came forward and helped the fallen woman to her feet, and Aspen passed the little bundle back to her. She received it with trembling hands and looked over at Sarave. Hui, the woman whispered, looking as if she couldn't decide whether to return to her knees or not. I have things I must tell you. Please, I beg you, listen. Sarave's aunt touched her niece's arm. This old woman is tired. Let's go see your castle. She cackled suddenly, revealing teeth worn down by age to almost human bluntness. The little Felfinti tells me it has plenty of room for guests. Aspen looked around, having nearly forgotten that Rouge was there. The girl was watching with fascinated bemusement, and shot Aspen two thumbs up when she noticed he was looking at her. That was awesome, Aspen. We don't even have to worry about spies now. He shook his head subtly. There will be those who haven't given their souls to Apophis, but are no less evil for that. We are fortunate that he is a greedy god, and consumes his followers as well as his victims. Rouge made a face. Gross, but yeah, I guess so. The girl paused, then said reluctantly, Look, I have to go and I might not be back for a few days. I have this thing I have to do tomorrow, and I don't know how long it'll take. Are you guys okay? Aspen looked around at the crowd of goblins and sighed internally. We're all right for now, I think. Will Mott or the others be able to come help us? The girl shrugged. WikiWee is busy, but Lyric and Fluff will definitely be here, though I don't know how much help they actually are. I think Tess is working this weekend, but Doom said she's free. Aspen chuckled at the memory of Lyric and Flu Flu gazing at each other with eyes full of first love and teenage angst. The Wood Elf Huntress' grandiloquence seemed contagious, and Lyric had caught it, and when the two were together they could be heard spouting phrases such as, My cherished one and, until we may once again meet in this vale of tears. Flu Flu is an excellent archer, he said diplomatically, and Rouge snorted. Lyric has been watching a ton of vids on lute playing. I think he wants to try writing a song for Fluff. Aspen's eyes widened, and he felt a jolt of real fear. Ah, I see. Could you please let me know if he actually completes such a song? Rouge laughed. So you can be elsewhere? You, me, and everybody else. Poor Fluff has no idea what she's in for. I just hope she doesn't dump him if he tries it. Aspen thought of a certain song that had literally led to a man's death, and winced. As do I. They exchanged a smile, and Rouge lifted her hand. I can't wait until we get a Traveler's Guild here. I miss resting in the dead tent. Oh well. Will you take my zombie back to the house? Aspen nodded, and Silas piped up with Bye Rouge, before the elf's bright hazel eyes glazed over. Her zombie walked over to Aspen, and placed itself a precise 6 feet behind him. Aspen turned back to Sarave and her aunt. The old woman was watching all of this with narrowed eyes, and settled a hand on Sarave's arm with a firm grip that belied her age and claims of infirmity. Well then, the Kefi said, let us go to your home. We have so much to talk about. Talk they did. The sun was touching the horizon by the time a tired-looking Florence, Aspen's most trusted vassal, came to let them know that all of the goblins were settled somewhere. Most of the females wanted to stay together, and so they had been settled into one of the large caves William had carved beneath the city. There were nearly 30 of them, and about half had one or more babies, so the new population of goblins was already nearly half that of the former refugees. The male goblins, on the other hand, had mostly insisted on their own rooms. The ones who hadn't been sent to the dungeon that came with the castle, that is. Everyone who had been touched by Apophis was now in a cell, waiting to be interrogated by Aspen or Nekthat, to determine the extent of their involvement in Apophis's cult. The rest of the Kefiji, all five of them, were in rooms in the underground castle. They were off their own dead-end hallway, with access only to each other's rooms, and two pairs of guards were assigned to watch them at all times and prevent them from exploring without permission. Kurali had personally vouched for most of the Justat, who were, it turned out, traditionally the Queen's Guard, before they had been forced into becoming assassins by Akuji and the goblin leaders. Nekthat remembered a few of the warrior goblins as well, having worked with them, often slaying humans during the war, though that fact remained unspoken or trained with them. Only two Justat had joined the discredited Kefiji in the dungeon, and Nekthat himself was guarding them. Now Sarave, Aspen, Kurali, Auntie Lig, as the elderly female goblin insisted she be called, two young goblin servants, and the once-blighted female goblin, Marfi, were in Sarave's sitting room in the castle. Ligthan Kin Thalin was warming her gnarled bare feet in front of the fire, and sipping a goblet of the fruit juice Millie made for the children. Now, Auntie Lig said, fixing the cowering Marfi with a gimlet stare even as she wiggled her leathery toes happily, explain exactly how you came to be touched by the evil god girl. Phantom Hat was on his way. This news wasn't particularly surprising to Aspen or Sarave, but it was sobering to hear it stated so clearly nonetheless. On the other hand, it sounded as though Phantom Hat and Akuji were divided over what to do about their annoying new northern neighbors, and Akuji was staying behind in Bright while Phantom Hat came north with the cultists. Marfi was speaking, her teeth nearly chattering in her distress. Then they took away Poyo, my boy, and my Liwi said if I didn't poison the Hausera Queen, that they would slaughter him like a Tore. They made me swear to their god that I would do as they said, and they did something to refit. She still eats and sleeps, but she hasn't made a single noise. Not until today. The goblin woman looked over at her baby, which was snuggled up beside Juniper in her nest bed. The infant's eyes were open, and she cooed as she tried to grab her little feet in her tiny hands. Thank you, Marfi whispered, not for the first time. I thought she was gone. Sacrifice to my Liwi's false god. Her luminous eyes returned to Aspen with an almost worshipful gaze. Please, Lord, save my son as well. Aspen smiled uncomfortably and looked down at the little bottle resting on his palm. This is the same Vershala they used on you when they exiled you, Sarave. Sarave nodded, eyes locked on the gray stone phial. I am certain. The scent is unmistakable. Auntie Lig snorted. Kind of them to give us exactly what we need for that miserable excuse for a Kefiji you have locked up in your dungeon. Sarave sucked in a breath. Ligthan Vulka, please. The Vershala is a barbaric and cruel punishment that torments its victims before releasing them into death, the elderly goblin said firmly. Which is precisely why it works. It's the traditional punishment for anyone who dares betray the Hui, and if we want the stupid and uncivilized remnants of our once proud people to accept you as their hui, then you must act like one." Sarave hung her head, looking like a little girl who had just been reprimanded by her parents for putting her elbows on the table during a meal. Aspen felt a flush of protective anger, even though rationally he knew the old woman was probably right. "Can't you start new traditions?" he asked. "This place is meant to be all about bringing the races together. What if you used a punishment from a different culture? The elves, for instance, simply exile their enemies." Ligvin snorted. "The elves live for millennia. They do that so their naughty children can think about things and come back when they're properly apologetic." Sarave looked hopeful, though. "Humans lock people up for different amounts of time, depending on their crime, and have to feed and house the prisoners for years, or let them die in prison. Out of sight, out of mind. Auntie Lig dismissed this practice as well." Aspen pondered. "The head librarian once told me that the dwarves tattoo their criminals and remove their hands or tongues." Sarave hesitated, then said, "Tattoo where?" Aspen pointed to his cheekbone near his nose. "It used to be a brand, but they changed that a few centuries ago. Now they use magical ink so the tattoo can't be covered or removed." Auntie Lig made a thoughtful hum. "I suppose that could work," she said grudgingly. "Tattoo, then exile, and remove a hand as well." She fixed Sarave with a scowl. "Leaving your enemies alive is unwise, Saravale. Nekthat would tell you that." The little goblin queen folded her hands in her lap, and Aspen could see that they were trembling very slightly as she hid them in the soft folds of her skirt. "I do not want to be a queen of death, Ligvin Vulka. Can't you call me Lig Vul, as you did when you were young?" Ligvin leaned forward and set her crooked fingers over Sarave's, then sighed, looking defeated. "You were never as heartless as you needed to be, Sarah Vicnity. I was glad when you ran away with your Jeremy. You were meant to be queen, but not of such a pitiful and brutal race as ours has become." The aged goblin shot a conflicted look at the bed in which Juniper lay. "You only showed your true strength when it came time to protect your child. I hope you can find that strength now to protect all of us." Aspen gritted his teeth as Sarave's aunt all but called her weak. He opened his mouth, ready to argue in Sarave's defense, but Sarave herself was already speaking. "I will do everything I must, Kefi." Sarave extricated her hand from Ligvin's clutching fingers. "I will protect my child and this city with the last of my blood and breath, but I will not compromise myself in doing so. Our people must learn to be better, Vulka, and I will drag them down that shining path by their ears, kicking and screaming if I have to." By the end of this speech, Sarave was standing, and her eyes were fierce as she stared down her great aunt. In response, Ligvin sat back in her chair and grinned, baring her worn teeth in what must have been a ferocious display when she was younger. "Ha. There. There's the fire you need to deal with the Sothi the Goblinta have become. You are not hui of a kind and gentle people, Saravale, and being kind and gentle yourself will serve no one well." The old woman leaned forward again. "Change our traditions if you must, Saravale Hui, but never think it will be easy, or that you can show mercy. Keep your teeth on their throats, or they will rip yours out instead." Sarave glared down at her great aunt, hands fisted at her sides. "I am Saravale Hui of the family of Thalin. I will decide what kind of queen I will be." Slowly, with great effort, the elderly goblin female levered herself out of her chair and onto her knees, bowing her head before her niece. Her two attendants, who had been watching this exchange with consternation and alarm, hurried forward to bow beside her, pressing their foreheads to the floor. "I, Kefi Kin Thalin, vow to serve Saravale Hui for the rest of my days. Jove Korat Ikvhjn Kwepo, Saravale Hui." The two younger females echoed these words, and then Marfi too was on the floor, practically prostrate as she swore her own vow. Light flickered around Sarave, and her eyes grew wide. The thin silver band on her brow shimmered and widened, a single deep yellow gem appearing in the center. Sarave leaned down and touched her aunt on the head, murmuring something too low for Aspen to hear. Then she helped the old woman back to her feet and into her chair. There Ligvin Kin Thalin sat, face creased with fatigue but seemingly satisfied at last. A sudden knock broke the tableau as everyone looked toward the door. A moment later Florence, who had been standing guard outside the door, cracked it open. "William is here to speak to you, ah, your majesty." Even after so long, Florence still struggled to give the Goblin Queen precedence over Aspen. Sarave nodded regally. Let him in. The thin gray figure of William slipped through the door. He looked a little singed around the edges, as if he'd been out in the sun too long. He could take more sunlight than normal vampires, but he still burned if he was in direct light for more than a minute or so. William's reddish-blue eyes jumped from Sarave to Aspen, and then to the strangers in their midst. Ah, your majesty and your lordship. Aspen sighed inwardly. No matter how many times he told the old fructipier that he was no longer a lord, it didn't seem to stick any better than it did with Florence and the rest of the guards. Yes, William? Sarave was gentle with the old man, as always. Beside her, Ligthan stared in open-mouthed shock. Ah, you said to let you know I'm when the place, the head librarian. Sarave nodded and turned to her aunt. Ligthan Vula, I have urgent business elsewhere. I will show you to your room, and then. The old goblin snapped her mouth shut and raised a shaking finger to point at William. What are you saying, Sara Vale? That is a vampire. Destroy it quickly. William shrank back, nearly bumping into the wall beside the door through which he had just come. That isn't exactly. I'm not. Sarave held up a staying hand, and everyone froze. Aunt, do you think I am in league with the evil one? Ligthan's eyes shot back and forth from Sarave to Aspen, who had clearly wielded skills given by Gina, and was just as clearly allied with Sarave. No, but. Sarave cut in, and Aspen thought he detected a hint of pleasure at catching her aunt off guard, for once. William is no vampire. He drinks no blood and seeks nothing but peace. Remember this, Vulka, Sarave leaned forward. Refuge is a refuge for everyone, so long as they do not harm others. William harms no one, and he is welcome here. Ligthan nodded jerkily, but her moss-green skin was still pale. As you say, Sara Vale Hui, the old woman murmured, but her gaze was cold and unrepentant where it rested on William. Aspen made a mental note not to allow the two to be alone together until the aged goblin could get used to the idea of a friendly vampire. Vampires had long been one of Akuji's favored races, while goblins were little more than disposable bags of blood and meat. While Sarave was young enough that she probably hadn't met any vampires personally, an elder of Ligthan's age and experience had no doubt seen their depredations firsthand. It would be as difficult for her to forget old prejudices as it was going to be for the humans to dismiss the goblins' villainy, especially once the rather less well-educated and eloquent goblins appeared. Sarave looked as though she was thinking along the same lines as Aspen, and she shot him a questioning look. He nodded and walked over to the vampire, who looked like a mouse who knew a cat was coming for him. Let's go, William, Aspen said. He gestured to the door, and William hurried through it gratefully. Aspen looked back at Sarave. We'll meet you when you're done. She nodded gratefully and turned back to her aunt. Aspen stared at the large, inviting doorway where a blank wall had stood only the day before. Neat, tidy letters above the door read, Athenaeum Dungeon, learn until you die. Well, he said wryly, that's not ominous. William's pale lips nearly smiled, but as soon as a hint of fang appeared on his lower lip, he recalled himself and settled back into his usual timid posture. Ah, you said that you wanted to know as soon as. Took you long enough. The acerbic mental voice made him whip around. Sue me? The spider dropped down from the dark ceiling next to Aspen, and he reached out to allow her to perch on his arm. She was quite a bit larger and heavier than Silas, but he bore her weight willingly, just glad to see her up and moving. She had emerged from her molt quite a while ago, but she had seemed unwilling to leave Aspen's house atop the tower. She went out for food at night but slept most of the day and rarely spoke. There was clearly something bothering her, but whenever he asked, she simply said she needed to recover from her molt. Neither she nor her brother had ever needed such a thing before, however. So Aspen had been more than a little worried. Aspen stroked the dark blue hairs covering Sumi's abdomen. I'm glad to see you. The arachnid skittered up his arm, perching across his back and shoulder. And I you. Now what should we do about this? Aspen shook his head. I honestly don't know. If we go in, we may be trapped, and I certainly don't have time to fight my way through a dungeon right now. William cleared his throat. Ah, if I may, Lord Aspen, I believe you wish to seek an audience with the master of this dungeon, do you not? Aspen raised his brows, looking at the vampire in surprise. William didn't often offer suggestions, and Aspen was curious what the man had to say. Clearing his throat again, William went on. I was once hired for a job near a dungeon when I was still alive. The local lord, had to ask permission from the dungeon lord, as it were. He went in and simply, he shrugged awkwardly, asked as far as I remember. Aspen sensed Sarave approaching before she spoke. Then let us go in and ask. Aspen turned and looked at the goblin queen. Dark circles shadowed her eyes, but her gaze was clear and sure. He bowed his head. As you wish, Queen Saravale. She huffed a little laugh. Don't start, Aspen. He offered her a half smile, and her serious expression lightened with amusement. All right then, Sarave. Shall we? He offered her the arm Sumi didn't have pinned, and she laid her small green hand on it. Together they turned and entered the dungeon.